play that in front of the house. So, hello everyone. This is about United Diversity, which is a small co-op that's been going about 10 years, and we've done all sorts of random projects, from web development to compost toilets to all sorts of stuff. Mostly, it's me being a total info junkie person who... I'm quite lazy, actually, so I like to avoid reinventing the wheel. So what we're about really, as it says in the program here, is helping people to discover, contribute, and replicate existing solutions that are already out there, as opposed to reinventing the wheel again. When I wrote this, it was on a much broader. I was thinking of trying to do that broadly. The idea was to have a website where you can discover inspiring stories and all sorts of things, activism, climate change, community, eco-villages, eco-building and stuff. There is actually quite a lot of content here, but we're in the middle of rejigging the whole website. Get involved is contributing things. It's going to signpost people to ways they can contribute their time or their money or their assets. Share them or given them. Right now there's just a list of quite nice things you can invest in. Eco Land Co-op, the Radical Roots Fund, the Go Cooperative Rail Services, community wind farms, etc, etc. And actually this sort of stuff is what we've decided to start focusing in on. So the question for me is, who out there is doing what kind of blatantly needs to be done in a nice, effective way that could be replicated? And for me, it is people who are doing community share issues. So my friend Vinay Gupta has got a nice model, which he calls the Six Ways to Die model. He points out that there's pretty much only six ways to die. You can be too hot, too cold, too hungry, too thirsty, ill or injured. Good. That covers most stuff. And we're sort of fairly removed from most of those ways of dying, in large part because of infrastructure, which keeps us alive. You know, the pipes that come into our house and bring the gas and the water, and the pipes that take away our shit and the trucks that come and get our rubbish, and the roads that trucks bring our food down and stuff like that. Almost by definition, infrastructure is that which you don't notice until it stops working, and then the shit hits the fan. I don't generally go, well, I flick a switch, I'm not thinking about the wires that go to the grid, which goes to the power station, which goes to the coal, which goes back to the mine, which the amount of infrastructure that's needed to keep that system running. And because, the last couple of hundred years is when our society has evolved during this big oil party with abundant, cheap fossil fuels, the infrastructure that we've built, in the West at least, so-called West, is largely dependent on those huge inputs of fossil fuels, which are declining. Also highly carbon emitting, and also controlled by large unaccountable corporations. So I think any kind of realist look at the things that stop us from dying from those things, the Vinay splits into shelter, supply and security, some types of infrastructure. There's overlaps, of course. The infrastructure upon which we survive on is at risk of massive failure. It's not just at risk of it, it blatantly will fail at some point in the future, in the same way that the economic system is sort of beginning to show how it's unravelling. It is a huge pyramid system, and they've all got the same dynamics, and they will collapse. So it seems to me a sensible thing to do is to create, which is a lot of permaculturists are active doing, there's probably lots of people here that have done it more than me, is create, you know, small scale, community scale or even household scale infrastructure which takes care of not dying from being too old, too hot, too, etc. And so I've sort of sought out amongst loads of other inspiring projects people that are doing that. So Energy Prospects, for example, which is a new sort of fund co-op set up by Energy for All, they've been responsible for nearly all of the community-owned wind farms around the country, and now they're providing a service. Well, they take on the risk of trying to get planning for a new wind farm for a new community that want to do a crowd, you know, wants to set up a new wind farm. And if they get the planning, then they'll charge a fee to the new co-op that will then go on and make the energy and what have you. And there's recently been a huge growth in people doing this sort of stuff, and they all use a legal structure called Industrial Providence Societies, pretty much, which is, well, it's now being changed to Cooperative and Community Benefit Societies, which sort of says more on the tin what they are. And what's special about Industrial Providence Societies is that they can sell particular type of shares to the public, known as withdrawable shares, and they could also offer loan stock to the public, which is asking for a fixed term, fixed rate loan. Sometimes, normally when people, you're selling loan stock, you offer, it's quite common for people to say, yeah, you can have anywhere between 0 to 5% on this, up to you, and lots of people choose 0%, right of you. And there's been a massive increase in all these sorts of things. And of course there is, because people are investing money, because people are asking the general public to invest money, government and everyone are all a bit worried, oh, what if something goes tits up? So, there is an example. There was a Progressive church or something that was set up in Industrial Providence Society, was selling shares, was taking members off all their congregation, but wasn't explaining that you could lose all this money. And that's sort of bad practice. So this community shares program, I can't recommend this enough, really. It's at communityshares.org.uk. is a government-funded initiative to sort of look at the best practice in this area. It's being run by the Co-ops UK and the Development Trust Association. And they're looking at about 10 different case studies and sort of recording their news as they go through. So, for example, there's a group in Manchester who are called United Manchester or something. It's Football United Manchester instead of Manchester United, and they're starting a cooperative football club. And they're doing a share issue at the moment to buy, I think they've already bought land, they're raising more money to build a new stadium. Similarly, there was one called My Football Club, who had the same idea, but they just thought, let's go and buy an existing team. And they did. You know, some guy just had this idea, said, I'm going to sell shares for 35 quid each, or whatever. He's actually buy £1 share and then give a £35 membership, which is for particular reasons. But they raised a load of money and brought, like, a First Division League club, which went on to win. So they've built this amazing platform for all their members, help decide where, it's like fantasy football for real. Like they say, I want to put the goalie, you know, I think this goalie should play, these guys should play up front. They've got this nice, and the final say is left to the coach, because, you know, he sees the players on a day-to-day basis and he knows if they're fit or what have you. But so far, he's always gone with what the members have collectively recommended. Just like, play this team. It's like, okay, cool, I'll try that. and it's doing quite well. Like, they won some FA Cup for First Division League or something.
What's
the
name of the team?
Ebbsfleet. Ebbsfleet United. And they're set to become really big, because it's the first train stop or last, depending on what way you're going from, on the Eurostar.
That's it, yeah.
So there is a Eurostar station in Ebbsfleet. Oh, so it's becoming the portal to Europe and this crowdfunding.
Where is it?
It's
Kent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a bit further than that. Is it a bit further than Ashford?
Something like that, yeah, around there.
So
but actually, this isn't new. So, 11 of the, I think 10 of the 11 people who won the World Cup, this just gone, all play for Barcelona. And Barcelona is a co-op and always has been. It's owned by its members. And when they want to get rid of the guy, they vote him out. You know, if they're, whereas, so the, these FC United people, what are they calling themselves? You know, Ed Mayo at a talk, who's heads up Co-ops UK, a recent community shares seminar, he pointed out that actually if all the members of Manchester United chipped in a few quid, like, because in Barcelona, if you want to have a say, you just have to become a member, which is, you know, not that much. And then you have your say and you can vote on the elections, and I think boards chosen at lottery and all sorts of matters. They've just published in English for the first time the rules of Barcelona, which you can download off the Co-ops UK site. Well, you can download it off here as well. Whereas if you want to say in Manchester United, you have to have, you know, £2 billion first. So you can buy a controlling share off the guy who's got slightly less money.
I've just never heard of anything like that. It's probably a thing. Barcelona's been around quite a long time.
Yeah.
Did I hear about it?
No, I mean, it's not unique. There's in Europe, quite a lot of football clubs are owned by their fans. And there are, I think there's like four or five small ones in the UK now, but there's no like big examples yet. So who knows, maybe Ebbsfleet will be running the FA Cup next or whatever. I'm not particularly into football, so I don't know that much. But there's loads of... One of the common examples is, you know, a local shop's closing down. You know, very basic piece of infrastructure in lots of villages. And people club together and buy it and run it as a co-op instead, or with the local pub or the local post office. And it's been, I mean, some of the amazingly successful. On this site, you can read through case studies. I mean, one of them I was reading the other day, you know, for a greengrocer's or whatever, literally in a few months, they'd come up with the idea, raised the money, bought the shop and opened. Which shows how, if you've got...
That's our greengrocer.
Is that your greengrocer?
Yeah.
There you are. I think this is them, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it's Slavic.
Yeah.
That's where I'm from, yeah. A friend of mine was just from
Slavic. Oh, okay.
But there's and there's similar, more case studies on here. And in the resources section, there's, I've been looking into this for ages and researching it a stupid amount, but by far the most useful document that I read is this just published one here, the Community Shares Practitioner's Guide to Governance and Offer Documents, which, there are lots of, yeah, I do a lot of collecting of useful information. So if you go to files.uniteddiversity.com, you'll get here, where there's lots and lots of folders.
Is there a link from the website?
Yeah, there will be somewhere, probably in Start a Project. Just on my phone. I should probably... just recently installed this app on my phone which automatically disconnects me when I'm not using it to save battery. Which in these moments isn't too handy. I think on Start a Project it links you through to there. It says eventually, yeah, this will be assigned blah 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 blah. For now, check out files. Our Tools for Change PDF library. But I've sort of lovingly created this collection of PDFs over about 10 years. And you could probably spend the rest of your life just reading documents here. But yeah, there's a whole folder on permaculture, for example. There's all sorts of goodies in there. Gaia's Garden, someone's photoed every page and turned that into a PDF. Very nice of them.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I mean, it's been on my hard drive for ages. It's only like within the last year that I thought, I should just whack it all online.
Yeah.
Partly because I was being over perfectionist. I wanted to give every file a nice name, that, yeah, which I have done to a large degree, but it's not totally done. Permaculture 2 is there.
Oh my goodness.
All sorts of goodies. And slowly what I've started doing on the website is sort of highlighting the best bits, so for example, there's a folder in here called legal structures, etc. But there's so much there that it's like, well, what are they and how do you know what to read and blah blah blah. So I've started sort of creating pages which, and these need to be filled out as well, but, you know, to just get your head round the different types of legal structure, read these three documents first. Yeah. But then once you've decided, if you do decide that you want to do an industrial provenance society, then go and read the community investment guy, because he goes, yeah, because there's loads of different model rules out there which are suitable for doing different things, and they might not be exactly suitable for what you're doing. So if you're registering an industrial provenance society, there are 22 different sponsoring bodies that you can go through to register that all have written their rules for particular things. And there's only three that actually advertise them as this is suitable for doing a community share issue. Co-ops UK, Wessex and Somerset Property Development Agency, or whatever they're called, which together, some of them have got two rules that they've, co-ops have got two rules, Wessex have got one, and Somerset have got one. So there's four rules which are sort of advertised as being suitable for this thing. And what that practitioner's guide does, that one, is it says, you know, the Financial Services Authority requires that your rules have these sections, A, B, C, you know, name, objects, etc. And it's got a nice appendix where it goes through the four main sets of rules that are suitable for doing them and what have they got in that section. So I've just gone through a process of going through the multi-stakeholder co-op rules, which I'm quite a fan of. Because most historically, there were like, most IPS co-ops would be a consumer co-op, owned and controlled by consumers, or a worker co-op, owned and controlled by the workers, at the expense of all the other stakeholders in that organisation. Yeah, so if it's the workers, what about the suppliers and the customers and the investors? Or if it's a consumer, what about all the other people? And in Europe, it's quite common to allow investors, who are just investors, they're not using the services, they're not member in any normal sense, to have some kind of say in their investment in these properties. And until Alex Lawrie had written these new rules and got them approved by FSA, that was impossible to do in this country. So he's had these approved, and now you can have a non-user member of, you know, class of members, which is just investors, but their say is limited to a maximum of 25% of the vote. Sort of thing, a collective vote. You could have it less if you wanted to, but then they might not want to invest. Because historically, the reason why it's useful is, it's, you know, people who are investing sizable amounts want to have some kind of say. And often they don't, they want to just, a lot of people in, so Wessex, who do one of the, they're one of the sponsoring bodies, what are they called? Wessex Community Assets or something. They recently done some research, which was presented at a recent seminar, on who invests in these community share issues, and why, and what do they get from them. And, interestingly, 93% of the people that responded to the survey have no intention of ever taking their money out. But they don't consider it a donation. what they and what they're sort of interested in is being part of something. And you know, and having their say, it's that community building. You know, they want to be part of something. Yeah, for example, these days everyone's really interested, that's their community, Wessex Community Assets, that's what they call it. Forest Gardens, for example, yeah, it's quite a, everyone's talking about them now. But where can I just say, okay, I want to support the creation of forest gardens, where's the Forest Garden Fund? Or where's the Sustainable Food Fund? Where's the... So, we were thinking about sharing info about all these different inspirational projects, but now we're focusing on basically co-ops doing community share issues for community scale infrastructure. Because that to me seems to be quite urgent if we want to stop dying from 6 ways to die in the future. So the idea is we're going to try and build a platform, and initially we'll just help people, you know, face to face and on the phone, on the email, what have you, which will help guide you through the process of selecting which are the rules for you and adopting those rules for your projects, and then managing your IPS online, you know, a lot of the administration. So H2O and who are doing the community hydro, and Energy Prospects who are doing community wind, and Eco Land Co-op who are doing eco small holdings. The minimum investment is like 500 quid or 250 quid. You know, for a lot of people that's still out of reach. You know, as they might have a fiver or a tenner. But lots of people keep that barrier high because there's a cost to administering your members and involving them in the decision-making process. And if that's too low, then that's not covered at all. Some solve that by having a membership fee in addition to buying shares. But I think a lot of that can be solved by having nice online tools so people can participate, make proposals, and have online decision-making tools and share accounts. So, you know, part of the research they did in this Who Buys Community Shares, a lot of the feedback that came back was, if I wanted to just invest in a normal unit trust fund that invests in big corporate shares, I could probably go online, do a quick search, find somewhere, give my credit card details, done. There's nothing similar for investing in all the stuff we should be investing in. So this will be a platform, so there'll be three types of members in the multi-stakeholder co-op we're going for. There's like the service users, who are people who create a profile for a new or existing project for which they want to raise funds for. There'll be the workers who are building the platform and giving the legal advice and the expert advice, who will pull in on contract basis and ad hoc. And there's the investors, you know, who could be anyone giving, you know, haven't worked out the figures yet, but it's hopefully going to be something like £10 a month will be the membership fee. Half of that will be your buying shares, so every £5 of it is going to the cost of running the platform, and £5 of it is you buying shares in a common fund sort of thing. So we'll, part of the process is that at the seminar, one guy was like, let's say I had some money, I don't, but let's say I did and I wanted to invest in one of these, how would I know which ones are the good ones to invest in? So partly the idea is to answer that in a community way, so we can all, projects can post and tag their stuff, so we're a food project in this area, in Scotland or whatever. And so people can find things by type, and people can comment on them saying, oh, actually this is a bunch of, you know, no hopers, and they're not going to do anything. Or they can say, these guys really know what they're doing, your money is safe with them, and we'll decide. So there'll be a process whereby all the members, however much you've invested, will, you know, each month or whatever, we'll decide which is our favourite project that month, and then in the common fund will go into that. But then the fact that the community's chosen that will probably encourage other people who just coming in to go, oh, well, that seems like a good investment. Or,
you just lost power or
something. Yeah, I think. Wake up.
Right, so that would be the United Diversity, is that what's going to...
Eventually that'll show up there, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're at the stage now, it's still quite early stage, of going through... I mean, I can show you. Going through the multi-stakeholder rules, say, okay, we want to use those ones. I'm just waiting for it to go back online again. We want to use those ones, but we want to amend them a bit, and we want to add other rules to them. So I've gone through the practitioner's guide, saying, okay, this is what multi-stakeholder rules have got in that section. I like that, or I don't like that much, or I want to change it a bit. But then there's all these other rules that have got other... So, you know, it's nice to have a rule, I think, that lets people pay for their shares in installments, for example. And off the shelf, the Somerset multi-stakeholder rules don't allow for that, but some of the other ones do. So we'll be able to copy and paste a bit of sort of pre-authorised by the FSA text and whack that in there. Come on, stupid thing. That's not doing it. It's not happy. That's online. Yep. Stupid thing. Okay.
Classic on-off trick. That's sort of pretty much it. I'm a bit I could go on forever about loads of things, but any questions?
Is an obvious one to go for now kind of the feeding tariff, is to raise money around that, and then you actually get a payback.
Yeah, exactly. So I know quite a few people who I've started talking about who want to do a solar co-op.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's something we're thinking about at Organic Leaves. We've got some warehousing on our site.
Right.
It's a food growing project. And we've been quite inspired by the Unicorn co-op in Manchester.
Yeah.
And they've developed in a fairly significant, they're basically a supermarket. It's not totally organic, but mainly organic, and it's whole food. And
they've
all
started
local.
Buying land as well, haven't they?
And they've bought some land.
Supply themselves.
30 acres of land. But they've also bought their building previous to that, loan stock.
Exactly, so they've been
they've
doing...
Done it twice now and they bought land.
When this, they've ended up focusing, this community shares thing has ended up focusing more on the shares, you know, equity as opposed to debt. Because it's, if you can raise equity, it's nicer because you don't have to pay it back unless they ask for it. And then you can limit the restrictions on, you know, so lots of them say we'll only let people withdraw 10% of the total capital each year. First come, first serve basis, for example. Only they've nearly always got some kind of terms on, you have to give us 180 days notice, or 3 months notice, or 6 months notice, or there's always term clause where basically it's at the board's discretion. You know, if that's going to totally bankrupt us, then we're not going to give you the money. And we might go bankrupt anyway, and then you'll lose all your money. I mean, in that practitioner's guide, it also points out there's various different types of projects and different types of offer. So lots of people have got like a membership offer where it's just give us £1. Yeah, it's not really investment, it's like a token, you become a member and you do have a say and you can stand for the board and you can elect the board. And or there's like a pioneer offer, which is for a new startup that's raising funds to get investment ready. You know, they might be raising funds to write their business plan. Then ask for more funds, yeah, and that's a really high risk offering, so it's suggested that you shouldn't just ask the general public to invest in that, but you should ask, you know, your existing networks who are supportive of that sort of stuff. And then there's the time-bound offer, which is like, okay, we're investment ready, we're ready to go now, we've got our, in the next 6 months, we want to raise the money to buy a bit of land. You know, so we need £100,000 by this date. And then you have to be very clear of what you're going to do if you raise the money and what you're going to do if you don't raise the money. But once you've
done that a couple of times and you've got a bit of a track record, then it's appropriate. Although some people jump straight to this stage, you know, there's no golden rule really. Then it's appropriate to have a sort of general open offer, just saying, hello everyone, give us money. So there's a co-op called Shared Interest. They've been going since the early 80s. And they basically help set up fair trade co-ops in the developing world. But they've raised over 23 million, I think, from about 8,000 people over, you know, since the 80s.
Is there a group of people who are very good at producing brochures for those sales rates, or prospectuses, I believe they're called, but particularly focusing on co-ops? Because we've got a CSO in Sheffield called Hazelhurst Co-op Limited.
I know, yeah, I've been following you on the wiki.
Oh, great.
Chris is amazing at his documentation.
From
my perspective.
View, yes. He's very good, consistent at putting stuff up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not entirely accurate. But he's very good. He's
I found your wiki quite helpful.
Okay, good. Thank you. I shall pass that back to him.
Yeah. Well, in that practitioner's guide, it talks about what an offer document should look like for those different types of offer, whether it's a membership offer or a pioneer offer or a time-bound offer or what have you. But no, that's a good question. How do you then go from commissioning some design company to actually writing? Because, yeah, for example, they're great. There's a group in Manchester called UHC, the Ultimate Holding Company, who have been doing the design for Ecoland Co-op stuff. I'll show you an example.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't an offer document prospectus thing, it's just a little leaflet. I've only got four left, who wants one? Or we'll pass them around. Or... Are there some? Oh, there they are. I actually, personally, I think it's a bit of a crap leaflet.
Right.
Because it doesn't say what the minimum investment is, or that you can invest and make a quite healthy return should their business plan go according to plan. I find their project incredibly exciting, but if all I'd seen was this leaflet, I wouldn't mind.
And you've invested in them.
I've even invested in them, yeah.
UHD stands for Ultimate
Holding Company.
Holding Company.
A bunch of sort of activist designer chaps in there. Good question. I'm trying to find that out. So a SIP is a self-invested pension plan. So you could decide, rather than giving your money into a pension fund and then deciding how to invest it, you're allowed to say, actually, I want to decide how to invest it. And there's various brokers out there who will give you certain amounts of freedom. And then on those investments, yeah, you have to not take them out before your retirement age, but then you don't pay tax on the income off them and stuff like that, in the same way you don't on. You have the same tax rules as pension funds. I'm trying to find that out. So far, there seems to be no particular reason why not. Is the conclusion I've come to so far. There's a group, I've forgotten their name, I think they're called Bainbridge or something. There's a group who someone from I asked the Radical Roots list if any of them knew the answer to that question, and they said no, but I think that this group over there looked into it once. So I phoned them up and had a long chat, but the right person wasn't there, was about to go on holiday, and I'm hoping to hear back from that person soon. Because in some ways you're always getting a guaranteed return if you're not paying, you know, if you get tax breaks and tax credits off it. Check back with me. And I'll hopefully know the answer to that one day. I think it's down to whether, if the brokers were familiar with that stuff. I don't think there's any legal reason why not. Our plan is to have, so one of the sets of rules that we want to lift something from, allow them to create different sort of pools of money, if you like. So you can say, you know, earmarked funds. So this
we'll probably do that. You know, we'll have an energy fund and a food fund, and a, so you can put your tenner a month in the pot. And say I want to direct it towards food projects, or I want some of it to go to food projects, some of it to go to energy projects, or just put it in where the community decides month to month, or whatever. Ideally, sometimes that, sometimes down the line. Yeah, it can be done. Sometimes really quickly. See, like people do want to. I think if someone launched a forest garden fund tomorrow, you know, they could probably raise a few hundred quid before they left the site. And there's, I mean, for smaller scale. So I'm a big fan of crowdfunding generally, which is what sort of online geeks call it. Whereas all these, what's interesting is there's so far not much overlap between sort of community shares doing it through IPS world. Like some of the successful Save a Pub, Save a Shop people don't even have a website, they don't even email, they've, you know, because it is a local shop, they've just gone door to door and said, look, here's this, if you want to invest in this, then we're going to buy the shop. Oh yeah, okay, that's right. But simultaneously, there's a growing amount of platforms online, crowdfunding platforms. The one I've used is called Indiegogo, which is indiegogo.com. And yeah, it's just a nice, and there's a new one launching here, but not just for anyone, called Buzzbank, which I think is buzzbank.org. And they're about to launch towards the end of this year. They've got loads of amazing pioneer projects on there that you can pledge money to now, but you can't actually give them money yet. The London Orchard Project is one example, which is doing lots of fruit harvesting and fruit tree planting.
What's it called, the website?
Buzzbank.org. The other one is Indiegogo.com. Yeah, and you can have really. So I've some of you might have heard of the Dark Mountain Project. But anyway, they wanted to write a manifesto. So they did a little crowdfunding thing for that and raised enough money to print this little manifesto. And then they wanted to write a book, Dark Mountain Journal, and they did that on Indiegogo. They said, you know, we need however many thousands of dollars it is to produce these hand-bound hardback books. and they raised money for that on Indiegogo. And then there's this poet called Disraeli, who he's got this amazing play, which name I've forgotten. And he got a gig in Egypt, but he's, you know, he's really green. He didn't want to fly to Egypt. So he was like, oh shit, what do I do? It's a really well-paid gig in Egypt. You know, I can't get there. So he turned it into a whole art project. Said, okay, I'm going to crowdfund my overland journey there and do gigs along the way and film it along the way and photo it along the way and stuff. And he went on Indiegogo and created a project. And sadly, he hasn't made enough to do all the work that got hope when they got home. Yeah, so they've now got all this footage and stuff. And their idea is to raise enough money to be able to pay people to do that so that they can then freely share the video afterwards, because they've made a little documentary. They haven't done, so no, I'm going to email about it. But then, I mean, last week, or the week before last or something, some of you might have been using Ning sites. These are create your own social software. Social network thing that millions of people have been using them, and then just this year they decided to start charging and not have a free service anymore. So loads of people have been moving off or trying to raise money. But there's one I set up for another group called the Peer to Peer Foundation, and it's like, oh shit, we haven't actually done anything, and in 5 days if we don't pay, it's going to close down. And there's a nice community of people on there and quite a lot of decent content. What should we do? So I thought, oh, I'll just back up an Indiegogo project. The minimum they let you put as a target is $500. We only needed $200. So I was like, okay, well, the $500 then. And we'll use the other $300 to try and build a nice open source home so that this doesn't happen again over the course of the next year, sort of thing. And I thought, I wonder if we will be able to raise $500 in 5 days. And we ended up raising $650 in one. I was like, fucking hell. People like that site.
Did you get to see where the investments are coming from?
Like, yeah, and it's a really nice platform that makes, like, so once they've done it, it gives them a little, share this on Facebook, share this on Twitter, share this on email, And then if and then that sends out a referral link. So then it shows, you know, and this person referred. There's like, shows you the comments. Someone donated, unless they choose it to be anonymous, which they can. You know, someone donated $10, someone donated $50, someone referred someone again, someone referred someone again.
You need the rules of the incorporated structure to say how that investment will be paid back or not paid
back.
Well,
and this, on Indiegogo stuff, it's all very informal. Like, right. These people aren't investing.
Right.
It very explicitly says you're not allowed to offer share of profits or to, you know, it's quite tokenistic, really. You know, you get, if it's a book, it's obvious, like, we'll give you a signed copy or whatever. Okay. With the Dark Mountain one, they were having a festival as well. It's like, so if you give $250, we'll give you a free ticket to our festival as well, and a signed copy of the book.
So it's like a donation with terms.
Yeah, it's really like a donation with a few sort of perks. Yeah. They call them VIP perks. Okay. I mean, I couldn't really think in the time I had, shit, what do I do? Like, I've got nothing. I was just like, give $10 and you get a warm, fuzzy feeling inside. Give $20 and you get twice the fuzziness. But it seemed to work. Like, so one of the offers, one of the amounts was 200, and I called that. You can sort of give them each name. So I called that Ning Saver. It's like, you know, if you've got the resources to just save us in one fell swoop, then please do so. And actually, the first person who contacted us was like, I want to give you that $200. What's the best way for me
to do it? Yeah, I suppose money's an energy like everything else.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that are obviously helping it flow more easily. You know,
yeah,
it's obviously
the right direction.
People with disposable income that work, you know, too much, earn too much. And they just go,
Well,
they believe in it. They're like, I would happily, like, buy a round of drinks at the pub. I'm not going to do that tonight. I'm just going to give you guys 50 quid.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I've recently got obsessed with all this sort of stuff to some degree. You know, and I've blown my whole inheritance on giving £10 to all these cool projects. But it gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling. Yeah, like, I've recently invested in the Unplanned trip to Egypt, the Dark Mountain Manifesto, the Dark Mountain Journal, an open source clothing company that's starting up, an open source laser cutter project. You know, the London Orchard Project, a book about time banking. There's loads of great stuff.
Yeah. Kia, is it Kia?
Kiva,
Like, I've done it. I've got a few things going on at Kiva.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite groovy as well.
That's Kiva, K-I-V-A. And it's like, it just houses all these development projects going on around the world. So you can search based on, you know, your interests, and you'll find people that have got an appeal for, say, $2,000. And that'll show you where they are on the scale and how much they need and by what point they need it, and then you can donate however much you want and you will get that money back.
Yeah, it's actually lending. Like, Kiva is micro-lending.
It's micro-lending, but
to development projects.
Yeah, I think I've made about five back so far. But I haven't given for that reason anyway.
I've
given because I wanted to do something.
I mean, there's a similar thing for people to people here. There's a thing called Zopa.
Zopa?
Yeah, ZOAPA.com, I think. Where you can get a loan or lend money to other individuals in the UK. And I know a guy in there who's got a bit of savings, you know, he's getting 8 or 9% return by lending people a few grand here and there, who he trusts, you know, because he thinks their profile's filled in nicely, you know, which is more than he'll get from the bank, and they're getting it, you know, they're probably getting it at a cheaper interest rate than they get at the bank.
Yeah, cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
So, profile you're talking about, is that an online profile?
Yeah, that's someone's created an account on Zopa. I mean, a lot of, some of you have probably heard of the Transition Conference. There was this blogger woman who gave a talk about the whole financial collapse, and everyone came out there, what are we going to do? Our house prices are going to go through the floor, our mortgage is going to go through the roof, and affordability of basic goods is going to go through the roof, and oh god, maybe we should all buy gold or land, or but she ended with, actually, what's most important is social ties. You know, that's the ultimate safety net. You know, make some damn friends quickly. Locally, you know, where you are. And there are loads of, you know, I was really amazingly surprised. Probably all heard of Mark Boyle, the Moneyless Man. He's been getting a lot of press recently. He's lived for 2 years now, virtually, with not using money at all.
guy that hands around bits of paper with love on it, is he?
No.
No, he did quite well as well.
Yeah. No, I had a nice story about someone who did that with a parking fine. You know, he sent them, he printed little tickets of unconditional love tokens and sent them in. You know, and said, here we are, I'm paying, it's 40 quid fine, here's 40 unconditional love tokens. And they sent it back saying it's 80 quid now. So he sent back 80. And they sent back saying, we don't, you know, and he wrote saying, you don't seem to understand. You know, I didn't voluntarily engage in this exchange with you. And I haven't got the currency that you're asking for me, but I do have this currency. You can come to my house at any time for unconditional love. and then they sent him a form back saying, if you want to appeal, fill in this form, sort of thing. So he filled in the appeal form, and under sort of reason for appeal, he just wrote, it never happened. I never parked there. It's all lies, sort of thing. Yeah. And then he just never heard from him. So, yeah, it kind of worked. But yeah, on Mark Boyle, he's written a whole book called The Moneyless Man about his whole. For him, it's about we've all become alienated in some ways from this infrastructure that keeps us alive and the goods that we buy. You know, we don't see the backstory of the mine and the truck and, you know, and he sees money as the tool that enables that disconnection, which, you know, it does to a degree. So he's decided to stop using money so that he's forced to reconnect with where everything he consumes and uses comes from. I mean, it's a bit of a radical step, but he's got this nice site. Just for the love of it, .org, because he wants people to just exchange stuff just for the love of it. And when I first registered on the site, it was like, who's around me? But because he's got a blog on The Guardian now, and he's getting covered, his books come out, and he's been in
he's making loads of money.
Well, no, I don't actually know if he's getting money for all that, but he won't accept. If he is, it will all be going into his charitable trust.
Oh yeah.
To buy land, he wants to create a free economic village, where no money, you know, a gift economy village basically. Yeah. And he's starting a charitable trust where all the proceeds from the book are going to, and I assume his blogging work. He must be getting something out of it, other than that, good. I mean, there are loads of people that have actually done it for 10, 20 years. There are people out there who live without money, but they haven't blogged about it. So no one knows about them, so no one's inspired by their stories, and no one copies them. You know, whereas Mark's been a bit less radical in that he's allowed himself to keep a mobile phone that accepts incoming calls and a laptop. He allows himself to steal other people's Wi-Fi. You know, and he blogs and gets the word out there. But when I did a search a few days ago, you can sort of search. He's got quite a nice website, which he made money for and got built before he went moneyless. Where it'll show you the free economists that are registered within a certain radius of your postcode sort of thing. I think by default it shows you 10 miles or something. But in London that's ridiculous, you just get shown thousands and thousands of people. I was like, bloody hell. Okay, narrow it down. But I narrowed it down to 1 mile from my house, and there were 12 people within 1 mile that have registered on the free economy community. Well, that's not bad, you know, that's a dinner party. But when I did it to 2 miles, it's 116. I'm like, wow, this is actually taking off. And the idea is people can list the skills that they're willing to share, or tools they're willing to share, or land they're willing to share. No one seems to be doing the land bit, but then Landshare are doing that quite well. And there's also a much newer thing, so it's hardly got anything on it yet, called Street Bank, which is exactly the same idea. It's this guy who, his neighbours came and asked him if he had any sugar or milk or whatever. And because they made that first step, when he was having a party and he was short of a few chairs, he knocked on their door and said, hey, can I borrow some chairs? I'm having a button. I'm like, yay. And then he was sort of thinking, oh, I need a hedge cutter. And he was cycling along this road and he saw someone using a hedge cutter. And he thought, oh, how can I ask him to borrow his hedge cutter, sort of thing? And then he thought, I know, I'll build a web platform that lets people do that and stuff. So. But people are like, he was quite shy, so unless someone asked him already. And then Street Bank, he's obviously gone to some effort, because it's quite nice. Like, if you say, I've got a Samsung NZ10 netbook that I can share, he cleverly goes and search Google images and brings up an image and says, is this the exact image of it, or is it a likely thing? And so it's yeah, I hope that Street Bank and the economy community and...
I mean, obviously you've heard of Let's.
Yeah.
So, I mean, could that be incorporated? Because that's, do you know Mary Fee?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my mum ran Camden Let's, which is one of London's biggest for years.
Yeah.
I'm a bigger fan of Time Banks for numerous reasons, partly because I've... Let's tends to mirror, end up mirroring different market rates. So someone says, oh, well, I've trained years to be this person, so I'm going to charge loads of, in Camden they're called locks, I'm going to charge 20 locks an hour for it, whereas someone else might say, oh, I'm only 7 locks an hour. So it sort of mirrors that scarcity that's in the current.
But a lot of the people involved in Let's would be thinking a similar way.
Exactly, I mean, some Let's things make themselves obsolete. And end up becoming just like a free economy society. Yeah, because actually that's a really nice way to meet people who have got shared interests. And then once they've made a few locked exchanges, they think, hang on, should we just forget measuring it with friends?
Yeah.
You know, you don't measure it with your children and your best mates, you know.
Sure.
So once you've got to that level, it's sort of like ladders of trust and participation or what have you. Yeah, I prefer Time Banks, partly because they... it's an hour's an hour's an hour, yeah, it's all equal. And more so than that in some ways, because they realise at the beginning that people aren't used to, at least in this country, asking strangers for favours. And Let's always have like a time broker. You know, so you can phone that person who's a trusted central person and say, who's a hairdresser? And say, oh, let me introduce you to Mary, she's a great hairdresser, she's been on it for years, and then that makes them feel all safe and, you know, cared for. Whereas, yeah, I'm quite an out... You know, I quite like talking to strangers. Even on Camden Let's, it's like, oh, do I really want to phone up? And there's no, like, I don't know if this person's a nutter. Mm. And, yeah, I'm going to go around the house and they're going to torture me. Or there's no sort of... Some of that's getting, you know, more and more Let's doing online stuff where you can incorporate feedback and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a guy who's built a Drupal distillation for doing... community currencies, which if you go to communityforge.org, I think it is. And there's a few people that have started using that now. So you could run your time. I think there's a new wave of complementary currency enthusiasts who I think will take things to a whole new level by doing them web based and mobile phone based and things. Mm. I mean, in Africa, mobile phones are what people trade with, using mobile phone credit. There's a huge Vodafone got a whole bank mobile phone banking system in Africa, basically. Which is
Don't worry.
Well, there's all different ways it can work. I mean, there's exciting open source projects out there for doing powerful. You know, anonymous digital cash and stuff like that. Some of which I've been involved with. The most developed one seems to be one called Open Transactions. So you Google Open Transactions, but there's another one called Bitcoin, another one called OpenCoin. From the platform that we want to do for helping people manage online share issues and online member management for IPSs. It's actually the same bit of regulation for credit unions. You know, I'd like to see a hell of a lot more credit unions out there as well. And obviously, once you're doing an actual financial service like that, you get more regulations. It's all savings and investments. And there is one tiny little project to create open source stuff for credit unions in the States. But I think that's the next stage. There's a group called, there's a project called One Click Orgs, and they've got a sort of private closed beta system at the moment where you can, well, they say it better than, it's probably all logged up.
What's it called again?
One Click Orgs.
They're advertising it in the
loo
there.
Are they?
Yeah.
So you can, it lets you create a nice constitution.
Oh, it's something.
No, that's something different. Yeah, that's something different. One Click Orgs. It's One Click Orgs with the dot before the GS. That's the website. But I think you can just Google it to find it anyway. So at the moment they've got a system where you can create an unincorporated association and a nice constitution for it, like asking various questions about how you want to organise yourself, and then you can make proposals and vote on them online and stuff. There's the London Hackspace, which is a non-profit group who are renting out spaces in London for nerdy geeks to get together and mess around with groovy open source technology and stuff. They're doing a project to develop the system, which is currently only for unincorporated associations, to be suitable for company limited by guarantee as well. And essentially all I'm saying is I want to also make it do it for industrial profit societies. But I don't know whether it's worth starting from what they've got or whether they've actually not got that much really yet. Other than a no-brainer idea. But so London Hackspace is going to kind of be the first virtual NGO where they make all their decisions and all their minutes and everything is all just online, which is pretty groovy.
I mean, with the sites where you're investing real money, what is the mechanism for the financial transaction? Is it PayPal or...?
Well, normally, yes.
Yeah.
On Indiegogo, there's another one called Kickstarter, for example, and they use Amazon payments.
Kickstarter,
yeah. But that's you can only use Kickstarter if you've got a US bank account and a US address. And that's because they're using Amazon payments.
Is it worth looking at as a sort of a project, though? I mean, is there anything that we could get from it that we won't get from the others, do you think? By looking at it.
Depends what you're trying to get from it. It's really nicely laid out and explained.
Yeah.
So sort of, it's got some cool projects on there that have succeeded. Yeah, so it's worth looking at for inspiration of how to fill in your profile.
Yeah.
On Indiegogo, they've got various options. You can do it through bank transfer, or you can do it through PayPal, or you can do it through Amazon, or you can do it through Google. But yeah, PayPal are by far the people that do all the internet transactions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They are a bank.
They are a bank. And they're owned by eBay.
Yeah.
By who?
eBay.
Oh.
Yeah. eBay bought them. Skype owned by eBay. What's totally mad is that they haven't integrated those two things much more tightly. So yeah, actually, if you're on eBay, it'd be really nice to chat to the person. and then they brought PayPal because that's what everyone was using on eBay.
Yeah.
Because they had their own system, and no one was using that because everyone was already using it.
And they had some spare cash and thought, We'll have Skype as well.
Yeah. Although I think they might be spinning off Skype again or something. Yeah. Can't keep up.
Skype was that was like a real entrepreneurial guy from Estonia.
Right.
He started to use VoIP stuff, and it just like he just caught the wave, you know, because there was a whole bunch of VoIP things, and he just caught the wave. Just like.
Yeah, I mean Skype. I don't use it much. It's not very stable on it.
No, I prefer VoIP cheaper.
Actually. Yeah. Yeah.
It's cheaper. The credit doesn't expire, you get loads of free minutes.
It's better, less callers.
You can SMS from the website. It does seem a bit better.
I mean, Skype have got some groovy technology, but it's all closed and locked down.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, the way Skype works is stealing the resources of all the computers that people have got Skype installed on. So if you've got Skype open, other people are using your bandwidth.
That's
how it works.
That's cool. It's like,
I mean, it's good. It's distributed computing.
Yeah. But they don't tell you that except in their terms.
Yeah, they don't really tell you. So, I mean, if your computer's going really slow, it might be because someone's making a video call through your computer.
But if you close Skype, it's not good.
Yeah, if you quit it. Yeah, okay. Don't minimize it. Turn it off. It's weird. I've been on Linux for years, and Skype for Linux doesn't really work very well. Crashes all the time, but my phone runs Linux, and somehow Nokia have made it work, so that's really nice.
Do you like Linux generally?
Yeah, I mean, I do. But originally, mostly for the sort of ethics of it all.
Yeah.
But these days, it's actually a lot of it. In lots of ways, it's easier.
Which one do you use?
Ubuntu, which is the one everyone uses these days, unless you're a total geek.
Yeah, I was looking at it, I was like, just so geeky.
Yeah, no, Ubuntu is the sort of most easiest one.
Levels.
Yeah, it was just the
level.
You
want
to start programming
on that. But yeah, it's remarkably good. I mean, it's just an incredible achievement, yeah, in the same way Wikipedia is.
Yeah.
Of the potential of mass collaboration.
Yeah.
On a huge scale.
Can I also mention that there's a great news network called the Real News Network? Has anyone heard of that?
Yeah.
That's totally.
I think I'm getting their emails quite a lot.
American focused, but totally donation based, like
yeah.
Totally open. You know,
yeah, yeah. It's not.
Run.
Doesn't have ads.
No, they've got no ties. Like, and although they are sort of like, you know, they're focusing on North America, mostly in the Middle East, but still.
Yeah, it's good. It's like if you want an alternative take on the already, you know, they sort of follow the lead of the agenda setters, you know, so News Corporation and Reuters will publish a few articles, and then they'll have an alternative take on the agenda that's already been set by the bad guys.
And they ask good questions, and they
it's quite nice.
He was the director for Return to, based in Afghanistan, Kandahar.
Right.
He was the director.
There's similar things. I don't know how well they're doing. There's one called Spot Us, spot.us, I think, which is crowdfund local investigative journalism, basically. It's like a journalist will say, yo, I would like to investigate this local company who are being cast by, who wants to give me the money to do it. I think I haven't followed their story to see how well they're actually doing.
It's great.
It's all great, but for me, like I'm saying, you know, crowdfunding infrastructure that keeps us alive is the most timely thing.
Yeah. So are you appealing for money at the moment?
As soon as we've got the rules sorted and we've incorporated as an industrial problem society, I'll do a membership offer and I'll start saying people who wants to put in anything from a quid up to just express that this is a good idea and you like this idea and you'd like to use this platform.
Mm-hmm.
And then off the back of that, we can probably get a grant to help us write a business plan and start developing the platform. And then when it's a bit further, we'll say, okay, I mean, we might do a thing on Indiegogo saying, we want to write this platform, donate. Because you're not going to get any return other than no one fucking really. Or maybe you'll get a link on the website in the credits. Yeah, that's quite often what you get.
But it isn't really about trading, is it? Like, I think people just genuinely want to see something positive happen.
Yeah.
And money is the means of
it. And there's people that want to contribute small amounts. Mm. So partly all we're doing is aggregating lots of... I want people to be able to join for a tenner a month. Or a fiver a month if possible, but I don't know if the sums will actually add up. And start directing their small amount into, and like if once we've answered this guy's question of can you put it into self-invested pension funds, then it gets really interesting. It's like, okay, because that's what these are really. Rather than investing in something that's destined to collapse, invest in a hydro system. Every time that fucking screw turns round, you've made money. And and as long as the mechanics keep making sure that screw's turned around, and as long as that river keeps running, then your nest egg is growing.
Mm.
It's kind of real wealth.
Yeah, because pensions are quite a problem, really, because the big ones will invest in all sorts of dodgy companies. Like arms companies would be doing quite well at the moment.
Oh yeah.
So that's where they're obliged to invest, isn't it?
Manchester University was one of the biggest funders for some arms company when I was there.
Yeah.
Fucking university. Yeah. Like $1 million, they had £1 million worth of...
Was that the pension fund?
No, it wasn't the pension, it was the university, it's wow. Education. Yeah, it was like, you can't be doing that, pretty much.
No, but yeah, I mean, everyone's, like, all the high street banks and all the mainstream pension funds are all investing in evil shit.
Yeah, constantly.
Because it makes money. Killing people makes loads of money.
Yeah.
That's the problem with
making the mill or all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Locking them up.
Make a mill, get them well, put them in prison.
Yeah.
Or keeping them keeping them ill, but just ticking over enough.
Yeah, to buy some.
Do some slave labour.
Yeah, keep them at work and in the shops. It's very clever.
And
yeah.
But these sort of things may be a way to combat that.
Yeah, this
Isn't
is
it?
Empowering,
man.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah,
I'm really
inspired.
Very good.
We've probably run over already, haven't we?
Yeah.
What time is this meant to finish?
Well, I don't know. I mean, dinner is at 7, so...
It's 2:15 now.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, man, thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You got an email list? Do you
want to
take our details?
I do actually have an email list. I'm trying to think if you go on the contact page of the website, I'm pretty sure there's a link saying or join our list. Or you can send us an email through that form. Or just drop me an email. My email's in the program, I think. Yep. And so is my phone number. You can start stalking me if you like. I'm on Facebook as well. Way too much. But I share lots of really inspirational stuff on there.
That's great. Yeah. Okay.